This is episode number 212 with the legendary Laird Hamilton.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Welcome everyone to today's episode number 212. Thank you so much for joining me. I had the pleasure of sitting down with a legend in today's sports world. His name is Laird Hamilton, and at 215 pounds at 6'3" with an uncommon combination of balance, flexibility, and strength, he is truly a larger-than-life athlete and individual. Not only is he the quintessential big wave surfer, Laird is also known as a renowned innovator and guiding genius of crossover board sports, including toe-in surfing, stand-up paddleboarding, and hydrofoil boarding. He is an incredible human being. I had the pleasure of training with him at his house, and I thought we were going to be doing some extreme pool workout and some other crazy lifting, but I went on a day and a morning when they did an hour of breathing, and it was one of the most challenging hours of my workout life. I was, in the first minute, thought I was going to pass out, and then after 20, 30 minutes, I thought I could hold my breath forever and had complete calm and clarity and felt like I was in another dimension. Then went back into more pain and anxiety and stress, but the breathing all allowed me to really focus and center myself. And it was one of the most inspiring hour workouts of my life, to be honest, to witness what we were creating together as a group of about 10 guys at his house in Malibu. And we dive into the mindset of the breath and the mindset of getting in the zone and really how to optimize your life at the highest levels throughout this entire interview. Had a pleasure connecting with him, a pleasure training with him, and hope to go learn some more if he lets me come back and train at his house ever again in the future. I'm very excited to get you guys into this episode. Want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor over at onnit.com. If you want to achieve total human optimization, then make sure to check out onnit.com. They've got some of the best fitness foods, workout gear, and supplements to take your mind and body to the next level. So if you want to achieve total human optimization, go ahead to onnit.com. That's onnit.com. And you get 10% off when you use the checkout code greatness on all supplements. So go ahead and check out onnit.com for more. I'm very excited to bring you our guest today. His name is Laird Hamilton. He's an incredible human being. So let's go ahead and dive into this episode with the one and only Laird Hamilton.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome, everyone, back to the School of Greatness podcast. Very excited. Laird Hamilton in his house.
Yeah.
Good to see you, my man.
You're welcome.
Very excited about this episode because of what you just put me through.
Okay.
Which was an intense workout, which is really just a breathing exercise.
Yes.
And before we get into your story, I read a quote somewhere. You probably know the quote, the real quote. Something about if you
master your breath, you have the strength of 10 tigers or something like that. Is that the quote? Have you heard that before?
I'm not sure, but that sounds...
There's some Tao quote that's like, you learn to master your breath, you have the strength of 10 tigers.
It's true.
Crazy, right?
It's real.
Why is breathing so important in our... a lot of entrepreneurs here, but in our existence, yes, in our lives.
I mean, I've been fortunate to be exposed to a couple different forms of breathing. And of course, you know, when you're in the ocean or in the water, breath is an ever important thing because your relationship with drowning. But, lately I've been kind of studying under this guy, Wim Hof, who does all this breath training. But the thing that you realize is that your spirit or your soul is connected to your breath.
Mm.
And that when a baby takes its first breath is when the spirit comes into the body, just like when the breath stops, so does the spirit leave.
Wow.
So if you really want to get into like a kind of a little bit, deeper conversation, it's a connection to your soul or your spirit. It's and then it's obviously mandatory for life.
I mean, exactly.
Breath is the way we get oxygen.
Yeah.
Oxygen is essential for living. So it's all about breathing at the end. And then we know through, cardiovascular activities and any kind of exertion, it's all about breathing. I mean, breathing is your fuel. That's your energy. That's your power. When you're not, eating food and digesting and drinking water, but oxygen is the thing that ultimately fires every cell in your body. Mm-hmm. So that's your,
So have you been practicing breathing strategies or techniques or working on your breath since you've been surfing and swimming in the ocean for your whole life? Have you been doing that? Or is it more in the last year you said you started to dive in and really practice it now?
Well, it's been the last year or so that I've really focused on isolation of the breath. I've been exposed to some yoga breathing and some types of yoga breathing over the years. But I haven't been so disciplined and consistent with it like I have been the last year and a half or two. But I indirectly have been doing it anyway.
Sure.
Because first of all, when
you're swimming.
Swimming's a breathing rhythm.
Yeah.
Being in the water, you always have to hold your breath. So you have a relationship with your breath. If you do any kind of diving or free diving, I mean, you already have established a deeper relationship than
the average
normal
person.
People.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because normally people they don't even think about breathing. They're not even, they're not even conscious
of it. And if you want to become a better swimmer or better in the water, or whatever sport you're doing, you have to master your breath at some level.
Absolutely.
You're getting better just by practicing it.
It's a byproduct of you doing it without even being conscious of it. And then when you do some heavy, circuits or other types of intense training, you know what the breath is all about. I mean, usually the breath is what dictates the failure. Mm. At a certain point when you're out of breath and you're behind, you look at any endurance athlete or any fighter, as soon as they start mouth breathing and everybody will say they're finished.
Yeah. Their body can't keep up.
Yeah. They're done. Yeah. They're going to say they're done.
So what have you learned about yourself in the last 2 years after essentially 40 years of breathing strategies and mastering your breath now into actually diving into these new strategies? What's opened up for you? What's been available for your body, your mind, your relationships, your health, your businesses when mastering this new way of breathing?
I think it definitely brings a certain amount of control over your system that you didn't have. You have a sensitivity to.
You have more control now in these last 2 years than you did
for
40 prior years studying this?
For sure.
Wow.
For sure. Just because of the sequencing of breathing and the way the body reacts to it.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into, it's like any form of training, when you put stress on the system, then the system adapts.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. I mean, evolution is because there's stress on a situation. So there's an adaptation and then we evolve but when you start stressing the body through the breathing, then it adapts and becomes more efficient.
Mm.
And you start to get control of it. You find that you can you know, you can breathe yourself into real calmness.
Yeah.
You can find you can use the energy to bring your energy up and make you more, you know, more aggressive or more powerful. You can control your lactic acid, you know, mm-hmm. threshold. I mean, it just, it seems somewhat, you know, boundless.
Yeah.
You know?
It's crazy. I mean, I'll just reiterate what happened for those that obviously weren't here. There was probably 10 of us outside. I walked in. You guys were already doing the breathing.
Sure.
And then we took us outside on your pool deck. And we started breathing. And within about 45 seconds, I thought I was going to pass out. You're like, okay, you're going to breathe in a certain way. And I'll have you demonstrate this for a second.
Sure.
You're going to breathe in a certain way.
Yeah.
And you don't want to hyperventilate,
yeah.
but close to it.
Yeah.
And I remember my whole body was like tingling. We're laying on our backs.
Yeah.
And my whole body was tingling. I was like, I might pass out if I push this.
Yeah.
Because I was
yeah.
dizzy. I was lightheaded. I was like, it's early morning here.
Yeah.
I'm like, where am I? Up in Malibu.
For sure.
And it was intense. And we did it for, I was like, yeah, okay, maybe this is like a 10, 15 minute thing, warm up
yeah. Yeah.
for the real workout.
Yeah.
But we did over an hour, it felt like.
For sure.
Of breathing.
For sure.
It was one of the most intense things I've ever done, one of the most intense workouts. And I've played, you know, high level sports in three different sports.
Absolutely.
It was insane.
But that's, I guess that's really the point. The point is that you can, you know, you can just be not moving
mm-hmm.
and put the system through an intensity
stress
that is more intense than moving all the parts.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's again part of the mastery of it. Like when
yeah.
You know, because we, you know, we're so trained in to believe that working out is something that, you know, you bang iron and
yeah.
you run and you bang and you, and it's all this hammering. And then we have to feel sore and feel like someone punched you to feel like that was a good workout.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was a good, oh yeah, me too. You know, can you walk? Oh, I can't walk. I can't walk either. You know, like that. And that was, and we consider that to be good
yeah.
training. When you can go into a situation where you're almost sedentary, you're laying there, you know, and then maybe
pass out.
And then maybe we make you do a couple push-ups and
yeah.
then you just go to a whole nother
yeah.
place. You know, it kind of shines a light on really what is training. And what is working out and what is being in shape and what is, you know, all of that we try to box up. We try
yeah.
to package and say, well, this is it. And we have a pretty good, you know, mindset about what we think it is. And
mm-hmm.
then all of a sudden something like that comes along and you're like, well, actually, we don't know what it is. But they really feed each other. Those systems are all, you know, they're all feeding each other. Your body doesn't really know the difference. If you can implement strict breathing, it doesn't know the difference between that and you running and forcing your body to breathe hard. At the end, your body's like, okay, well, I need oxygen
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason it is, either because I don't have it or because I'm burning it off. But at the end, it needs it. Doesn't need to know why.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have to get it. How do I get it? I got to do it through the breathing. And so you can, if you're disciplined. I mean, we learned because we were doing these altitude masks. Training.
Yes.
So we have these special
yes.
masks.
Training masks. Yep.
But they weren't not the restriction mask, but an actual mask that simulates
okay.
altitude.
Sure.
And you put these resistors on it. And it's a process that they developed for Russian fighter jet pilots.
Okay.
Before they had pressurized cabins, they'd send these guys up and they'd fly up to, you know, 15,000 feet. And all of a sudden they just burrow in and they're like, well, what's wrong? Well, they're not acclimated to
yeah.
the altitude. So how do we acclimate them? How do we acclimate thousands of them in a short period of time? And so they developed this mask system with these restrictors. And what you do is you wear an oximeter that tells you where your blood levels are.
Mm.
So, you can see where the blood level is and you're supposed to get your blood level down to like 70% oxygen and you stay there for 3 minutes and then you come back out. It takes 3 minutes to get there and you do that 6 times and then you do that once a day. And then within a couple months,
you can build up to it and you're
right to 20,000 feet and you're
yeah.
like, no problem.
You're fine.
But you realize that we can implement that same thing just by controlling your breathing and by restricting it. And you don't even need this thing, but it takes
right.
the discipline and it takes the time.
Yeah, it took, you know, we
yeah.
did an hour of
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
like,
yeah, yeah.
The interesting thing was I was doing it and I realized that I wasn't focused on anything else in my life. I wasn't, you know, it came up in a couple moments. I was like, oh, what about that thing that I was stressed about yesterday and about this relationship issue I have and about my business? But then it was like, you're going through so much in your body. You have to be in the moment present of your breath
in the moment,
that you can't stress about something else. Which was so fascinating. I was like, wow, just in an hour of meditation, essentially,
Meditation. And that's the whole thing with, you know, when a lot of Wim's training, the Iceman's training has to do with, and this is, you know, because I've been exposed to different forms of meditation, this is a mechanical meditation system.
Yeah.
Where you can actually implement a process to meditate. Not an ethereal process.
Yeah.
Not something where you have to kind of, you know, where you get to a Swami and he tells you to go to this thing and, you know, and from my scientific practical mindset where I come from, it doesn't work. I can't get there. Transcendental and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's great. But when you tell me breathe this many times, exhale, hold, breathe again, exhale, hold.
You're like going to see this. Mentality.
You're going to feel this. Athlete.
Yeah.
I'm coming from math. I'm coming from practical, you know, this does that, that does this. I need that. It can't be too ethereal for me. Sure. Some people actually excel in the ethereal, but I don't. I'm not, that's not the way my mind
works. You need to be in your body more.
That's right.
Yeah.
And this is a way that it's allowed me to do some meditation that, first of all, I didn't know it was possible. And I'm like, wow, that's what they're talking about when the guy, you know, I probably experienced some things that it takes somebody, you know, 10 or 15 years or more to from being taught by a guy in Tibet to even get near.
But you're getting into it in 3 to 6 months practicing
that's
it
right.
and being in your body.
That's right.
Not just being in your head.
No. Well, the presence, like you said, all of a sudden you're in a spot where you aren't thinking about there's nothing else.
You can't.
It won't allow you.
Like there were a couple moments, I think, when we were just relaxing, for like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So I was like,
you'll drift for a second. Yeah. We'll just bring it
right
back.
And then you're like, okay, here's the breathing exercise.
Yeah.
So if you can, let's maybe do like 15 to 20 seconds of what someone could practice at home in a safe environment.
Yeah.
Because you were pushing us pretty hard, and maybe you weren't, but for me as a newbie, I was like, oh, this is the real deal.
Yeah, well, you need to go into it slowly. I mean, you know, you can go online and get a course from Wim. Like, he has an incredible online program. You know, basically, the foundation of it really has to do I call it a circle breath, and I don't even, you know, I'm an amateur, but I know that I look at it as a circle breath in the sense of that the in and the out are similar, and that it's really, it's a rhythm. And it's almost like hyperventilation, but not that, because hyperventilation takes a lot of energy and you're short breathing.
So what does hyperventilation look like?
Hyperventilation is more like, like that, where you start to, where you'll get, you were not really getting, you're kind of, you can get a CO2 buildup, which happens, which make you, you know, I mean, you can pass out doing any kind of breathing, you know, or lack thereof.
Yeah.
But this breathing is more like, like if you think about pumping something up, like how you pump a raft up or how you, or you blow a balloon up, you know, you blow a balloon up like.
Right.
So you're in that kind of a rhythm and it really is about oxygenation, right? It's about getting oxygen into the system in a very efficient way and full saturation. And then from there, and you'll get, you know, you'll have all these, you know, sensations. You, like you said, you feel your body tingle. You'll have weird things on your lips or ears.
I was getting lightheaded. I thought I was going to pass out.
But those are totally normal, normal things.
So what's the purpose of oxygenating your body? What's that purpose? What's that do for the body once it's complete?
Well, I mean, ultimately, it definitely will allow you to work harder, you know, so that if you implement, like for example, you can do, you know, in Wim's program, you do these push-ups and you do them just with normal breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has you sit there and then you oxygenate your system and you exhale and hold your breath and do push-ups. And you do more push-ups on an exhale breath hold than you did while you were breathing.
Wait, so you could do more push-ups completely letting go and then holding it, not taking a breath in and pushing. You can do more push-ups than if you were breathing.
Yes.
How is that even possible? Doesn't your muscles need the oxygen?
They do, but the fact is that you've saturated your system with a volume of oxygen that you normally don't get when you just normal breathe and do an activity. And that's really what it's about, right? It's about you understanding that the oxygen that you store in your system is greater than the one you're getting.
Yeah.
And to get more, because also you have to remember it takes energy to breathe.
Yeah.
So when you add an activity with breathing, then now it takes energy just to do the breathing. And because our breathing isn't very efficient, we're not absorbing enough when you compound that with the amount of energy it takes to do the activity, right?
Right.
So yeah, the breathing energy, the energy it takes to do the activity, and then you're behind. And that's why ultimately the muscles don't fail because they're failing. They're just not getting the oxygen they need.
I mean, we were like,
Range Rover Sport leads by example. Picture this: assertive on-road performance meets commanding all-terrain capability. That's the third generation Range Rover Sport, which is the most desirable, advanced, and dynamically capable one yet. This vehicle redefines sporting luxury, offering an instinctive drive with engaging on-road dynamics and effortless composure. Now available in sleek new Stealth Pack, Carpathian gray exterior wrapped in satin protective film with black accents and black brake calipers. Inside the Range Rover Sport, advanced cabin technologies like active noise cancellation and cabin air purification offer new levels of comfort and refinement. And let's not forget about the award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment system. Enjoy a dynamic drive and total comfort with optional 22-way adjustable, heated, and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Wow, that's like a spa day while on the go. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Those of us who had shirts on, you know, we're dripping in sweat.
Absolutely.
Just breathing.
Absolutely.
And it's not even that hot out right now.
I know. It's counterintuitive.
It's
you look
crazy.
At it, you're like, oh yeah. And again, you know, to have the discipline to be able to do it and implement an hour of breathing and realize that you're really getting an incredible workout. That's part of the process. I think that's part of it. It's to teach you that, and you know, at a certain point, you know, you either have to be exposed to people that are doing it, or you have to be at a maturity level to handle it, because, you know, in our normal mindset,
we just
got to grind away at stuff. And it's because that's actually an easier way to approach things.
Yeah.
It's easier just to go, I'm going to get on my bike and I'm going to ride for, you know, 2 hours straight.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to go in here and I'm going to grab this weights and I'm just going to bang this weights, or I'm going to sprint back and forth across this field. It's another thing to go, okay, I'm going to go lay down.
It's more disciplined to do what we did.
Exactly. Which is the irony of it, right? It almost takes more discipline to do nothing than it does to do something. but that's kind of the irony of the story in a way.
It's interesting because I was so grateful that you were facilitating it for us, because it was my first time. I don't know if there were other guys' first time there.
A couple of the boys. I think they may have done it once or something.
Yeah. And it was interesting because I was just you made it so comfortable for us.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, it's okay. You don't have to do the same pace as everyone else.
Yeah.
If you need to breathe, you can take a break.
For sure.
And I really appreciated how you were facilitating that. You know, you've become like a master of teaching it through doing it yourself, it sounds like.
Well, but also that's a approach that I think that I've already always had. I think that's a little bit how I work in my, and it's not something that people perceive of me because of what I do. They think they're going to come and get hammered.
Yeah.
And that's not the way I approach things. Have you read Natural Born Heroes?
Not yet.
So Natural Born Heroes is a phenomenal book, but there's a big, you know, for me, it was biblical, because it was like of the philosophies of some of the guys in the book, like the guys that are like a fitness naturel that were all about training in nature, but they're also all about no competition. They were against competition because they felt like that it really was a restriction of elevation of everybody's individual thing. And I, because of my kind of lack of, because of my approach to competition, that I always feel like, you know, that a lot of our evolution gets held back because we protect information, because it's really about, I'm going to try to beat you. So if I know something that I think I can beat you with, I won't tell you, because then you'd have it too, and I wouldn't be able to beat you. But if my objective is to make you be as good as you can be, and I'm going to try to be as good as I can be, I will be like, you can't believe this, try this. And so that's more how I approach things. And I think because of, especially like in big wave riding, when we've gone out and done the things we've done, that it has to do with the fact that we've done it with camaraderie. We've done it with community. And really the evolution of man, if you looked at why man survived, was because of that was the way we behaved. Mm-hmm. And it was only when we became so populated and so dense did we create competition, was more out of entertainment, that really competition was designed for entertainment. That's why we have competition. Wow. And at the end, fighting and all these things that we have, they're not real fighting, because real fighting doesn't last very long and it's very brutal. You wouldn't watch it on TV, and it wouldn't be something that, and you wouldn't just do it unless you were planning on actually killing a person.
Yeah.
So and there's also this thing about the, you know, that everybody being able to do it, like true arts, true fighting or true activities are meant that a child should be able to do it and an old person should be able to do it to make it something that really is for the species.
Yeah.
So again, these are all kind of deep ingrained ways of approaching it, but that's how I never approach it like, hey, I'm going to hammer you. Now, if people come with the attitude like, hey, I can do this, then I might subject them to something. But that will be only because that's what they're asking for.
That, yeah.
If somebody comes to me with in confidence, like, hey, I'm going to give myself to you,
take care of me.
I'm always going to do that, because I think that, I mean, it has to do with how I grew up and where we are in dealing with heavy situations.
Yeah.
The situations are heavy enough. We don't need to do anything. I don't need to go and see how long you can hold your breath. Because what's that going to do? That doesn't do anything. And the bottom line is that you can destroy anybody. I don't care who you are. I can stack more weights. I can make you hold your breath longer. The stretch is deeper. The breath holding's, everything can always be, you know, you can always create something that's undoable.
Yeah.
It's more about creating something that's doable, and how high, far can we push that? How, you know, and again, individually push your barrier, you know, and it's interesting because that's total Wim Hof philosophy. That's total, natural born heroes philosophy. Like I see it and you start to see it, you know, and in a way, that's Tough Mudder's philosophy, that Spartan race philosophy. I mean, these are all about getting the collective through and ultimately that really is the most primal system, because that's how we made it. Because without each other, in our evolution, what match are we against, you know, all the things in the you know, in the world? We're no match.
It's kind of like
together.
Yeah. It's kind of like, nobody wins unless we all win mentality.
Absolutely. Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Nobody survives unless we all survive.
Yeah.
And so in a way, I mean, it doesn't mean I don't like healthy competition and the fun of, you know, a little paddleboard race or some bocce ball or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, my competition concept really used to be more like, or should I say, is more related to like, okay, you know, you want to compete with me and you think you're courageous. Well, then we'll go to a big cliff and we'll just keep going up until one of us doesn't jump, and whoever jumps higher is the winner. So I always thought that was a real defined
through courage.
Courage.
Yeah, wow.
For me, I go, you want to really talk about, you know, you want true competition. We have competition with courage. Mm. And I think that's part of the process that brought me to riding giant waves, that I thought, well, if I ride the biggest waves in the world and I ride bigger waves than anybody else has ever ridden, and most of the waves I ride, no one wants to ride, that kind of puts me in a unique position.
Yeah. It's your own.
That puts me like, you know, and I mean, I always love the term, the victory through attrition.
Through attrition. What's that? What do you mean
the
by
last
that?
Guy standing? Mm. That at the end, you don't even need to be any good.
Right.
If you're the last guy and everybody else is laid out.
Sure.
You know, in the 300.
Yeah.
When there's only one guy standing.
Yeah, right.
you're the winner.
It's interesting. And through that approach, you can give all your secrets away. You can give all the information away. It's still who's got the most courage.
That's right.
So you can just be as good as me technically.
That's right.
All the
information you need.
Are you willing to go above and beyond me?
That's right.
So
then it becomes a skill thing.
Yeah.
So then you add skill to that too.
Yes.
So that as an added element of, because you know what? There's always some crazy guy that'll do anything stupid too. So then, but then will they survive? So then, which again, that's part of the thing. But again, it's part about the survival thing where like, yeah, the guy might be able to go higher, but if you go up to a cliff and then the guy jumps higher than you and he
doesn't win.
Then you went higher, right?
Yeah,
so again, it has to do with, you have to still have, you can't have the element of who's the craziest because
you got a skill. Yeah.
You got to have, there has to be, and you also have to have understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have experience to know where the line is, where your line is.
Yeah.
Where your line is, right? Because you always have somebody that's willing to be a little bit
reckless or
crazier, but then can they do that?
Can they complete
year in and year out?
Yeah.
I mean, just saying year in and year out.
Right. So what got you into big wave surfing in the first place? What got you inspired by that sport?
Well, environment.
Yeah. You grew up
in
Hawaii.
I was in Hawaii. I was on the North Shore of Oahu when I was very young and exposed to the biggest waves in the world.
Yeah.
And then exposed to the greatest big wave surfers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then having a natural, kind of thing about a thrill, little like daredevil, thrill seeker. Like I just had a thing and, you know, it's a certain, you just have, it's like a mechanism that I think there's some science behind, you know, that certain guys are born with like missing something, like the thing about
screw
like,
loose.
Probably not, you know, where that line is of not to do or, but there's, I think there's a certain amount of us that it was important that we had that because we needed to be able to, do that. I said yesterday in the conversation, there needs to be an expendability, aspect to a certain group in our species.
Yeah.
We have to have that. That's part of what we needed in order to survive. Like,
if no one's willing to go against the tiger or whatever, then we all die. You know, if no one's willing to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And while he's getting eaten, we can all run and maybe we can pull it off.
Right, right, right.
So, and so we have that. I mean, that happens a lot with the young, you know, and that's why most of the wars are with young males.
Mm-hmm.
Young males have it, I think. And then maybe some of us have it more of it and we keep it longer. But at the end, we were talking about dolphins, how they protect themselves when they're being attacked. Uh-huh. And they put the babies in the middle, the mothers around the babies, the old people around the mothers. Then the fathers and then the adolescent males are on the outside.
Wow.
And because they're the ones that are the most aggressive and they're the most willing to take risk.
Hmm.
And you look and I go, well, human species aren't too far away from that.
Pretty similar. Yeah.
We're the ones that are young male. And then there's the ones within that group that have that, like I said, that little mechanism that drives you. So that's what drove me to big was because I had something inside of me. It was just this thing. And, you know, when you combine that with, you know, maybe just start to have some things to prove and maybe some kind of certain family dynamics and environments of racial tension. And, you know, you feed all those things into
the perfect storm. Yeah. And did you have all that?
Yeah.
All those things?
For sure.
And so what was the goal for you growing up? Was it to be the best big wave surfer? Was it to prove people wrong? Was it to?
No, well, maybe all of those. Like I had teachers say, you know, well, a lot of the Hawaiians and the Japanese and the other people that I grew up with were like, you know, they used to say, hey, you know, boy, you can't eat your surfboard. Cause I'd go surfing every day and I just had to be like crazed about surfing. And they're like, you know, you can't eat that thing. Like, hey, you're going to need to work or you have to survive. And I was like, oh, no, I think I can eat this thing. But, you know, or teachers telling you, you'll be nothing or, you know, or being in an environment where, you know, that you're white and everybody else isn't.
Right.
And you're kind of like that
puts
you as an outsider. And you know that if you are great at this thing, that they might not need to like you, but they'll respect you.
Sure.
You know, I have a saying like, they don't need to like me, but they need to respect me. And so that was a big part of it, you know? So, you know, those were the things that fed the, you know, and I remember when I was a kid at one point thinking, you know, like going to bed, wishing I would wake up as a giant Hawaiian, you know, just cause you couldn't date girls and, you know, you just had all these dynamics. It was like a nightmare. And, but those were the things that I think that also kind of those are the things that cultivated my, you know,
drive and passion.
Oh yeah. And my relentlessness and my fearlessness and all the, which I think I already had the mechanism. So it was perfect. Like I already had all the stuff. And then it was, you know, what do we say? You can't make an eagle out of a chicken. You can only make a super chicken. But I was fortunate maybe that I had an eagle's mentality, and then I was in an environment for training eagles. And so I had like a good combination of all the pieces that made it, you know, made it something that, you know, it was destiny.
Sure. What was the biggest adversity you feel like you had to go through growing up or in your young adult life?
I mean, listen, because, you know, we all can have 1,000 reasons why we're, you know, poor me and look what happened. Uh-huh. And I wouldn't change one thing. But, you know, we were poor mm-hmm. for sure. Very poor. And people, you know, it's interesting. I've had a conversation with some people that are like, you know, somebody from another country says, oh, you know, I was raised in a third world country and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but did you have an outhouse? Hmm. I had to explain to him what an outhouse was. I go, do you ever have cold showers? Like, do you have a tin roof on your house? Open tin roof with screen windows. Like, I mean, like, this is how, and
living off the land essentially.
Yeah. Well, no, lots of fruits. Yeah. Yeah. But you live off, but you have that. I mean, the Hawaiians, they lived off the land well. Yes. So I ate the way they ate and I worked with them. And I think that also led to cultivating my strength.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that because I was with the local people that the way they lived and, you know, I always used to say, I'm looking white, but I'm thinking brown, you know? So, but, you know, those things, I mean, I know that the being a Haole was probably the overriding blanket of the whole thing. I mean, you know, okay, money, whatever.
Hawaii. Haole is a white person in Hawaii. I lived on the Big Island, on Oahu for 3 months.
Exactly.
So I was in the taro fields. Yeah, I was making poi. I was like.
Exactly. So you know.
Yeah, I know a little.
I grew up eating taro and poi and pulling taro and.
It's not that good.
Working at a pig farm and So that, I think that was probably the most intense part is that racial.
Really? That was the most intense.
I think so.
And being in America still.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Interesting.
That didn't mean anything. America meant nothing. Because like Hawaii, we don't, we're not America, we're Hawaii. Yeah,
exactly.
Like when I go to Europe, people go, oh, you're from America.
You'll say, no, it's Hawaii, yeah.
Hawaii.
It's a different experience.
Well, that's not America. I go,
it's a different
Hawaii.
Culture, yeah.
Yeah. But if I looked at any one thing, I'd probably say, you know, I'd say that was probably the most intense part of, because it's in your school, it's at your house, it just doesn't. All the time.
Now,
affects who you can't date, you can't this, really. You can't go, it's like everything's affected by it.
Yeah. Now, do you feel like, was there a moment during a big competition where you earned everyone's respect, or was it kind of like over time, they were like, oh, here's the Haole, we respect you now for what you're creating, you're creating this pride of Hawaii, or you're making us proud. Was there a moment, or was it kind of like, it just grew over time?
No, I think it was over time. I think there were moments.
Yeah.
I think there were moments that would kind of solidify. I mean, at a certain point, you know, you have to start within your hometown or within your neighborhood, and you earn the respect of the people most immediately touching you. And then eventually you earn a little bit more as you get more well known and you're more out there, you earn more respect. But I never think I'm not a Haole. I'm not a white guy. Because I'm never not going to be a white guy.
Right.
So I don't ever have that unrealistic approach, which means that if I go to the wrong neighborhood or someplace where they don't know me, I'll be back where I began.
Yeah.
And so I'm realistic about that. I also know I have a lot of giant guys that would back me if I, you know, if something happened. But, you know, I'm used to kind of dealing with things on my own.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that shape you. I mean, those are the things that really, you know, it's the tempering that makes you what you are. And, you know, I have such respect for that, the culture that I was raised in. And actually most of the time, it wasn't the Hawaiians that really, that were the racist. It was a lot of the other cultures that were there that were like brought by the missionaries to be migrant workers.
Really?
You know, whether it's, well, you know, I mean, because you had tons of Chinese, tons of Japanese, Filipinos, Portuguese, you know, which Portuguese don't think they're white because they have black hair.
Yeah.
So, and I'm like, actually, you're whiter than I am.
Sure.
I'm tan. But, you know, but, you know, so you have a lot of those guys and the real Hawaiians, I mean, other than a few warriors, which, you know, which you could earn their respect. Some of these other guys, you were incapable of earning their respect because they didn't even respect themselves.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's a whole culture there. Yeah. If you would have grown up in the Orange County, where would
which
you
is what people think.
You're right.
Which
you grew
people,
up there?
When they, well, no, they, people would think they, when they look at me, I mean, because I'm from Southern California, they
the
think,
blonde hair,
they think that I, you know, that I was the captain of the football team and that I,
water polo. And
oh yeah. And I had all the, I had the, you know, I was homecoming king with the homecoming queen and all that stuff. And I'm like, obviously you don't know me, but I wouldn't be who I am.
You wouldn't be who you are.
I wouldn't be. No, mm-hmm. I would be. I mean, I don't know what I would be. I think I still have some certain things that are innate to my personality, you know, which I probably, there's a real good chance I could be incarcerated, even
sure.
where I grew up, had I not took a couple of the rights when I could have gone left kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just because my nature of my defiance and my, you know, I mean, what my friend calls me a contrarian, but I just, you know, I always quote Thoreau, which is, you know, disobedience is the true foundation of liberty and the obedient shall be slaves. So I'm from the disobedient group. So that doesn't go well in, you know, in organized society.
Of course.
It's good out there on the frontier.
In
the front. So as long as I can stay on the frontier, I'm cool. I was so blessed to have my mom take me to Hawaii as a child.
Yeah.
You know, I was born in San Francisco. We moved to Hawaii when I was 3 months old.
Wow.
And so it was a technicality that I wasn't born in Hawaii. Which it would have been a little easier because at least I could have stood up for myself and said, I'm born here, you know?
Yeah.
But I wasn't, so I didn't even have that, which in a way, maybe that's just, again, just a little added factor to...
A little chip on your shoulder.
Just a little extra, you know, boost.
Sure.
Boost in the rocket.
Yeah, I like it. Now, I'm curious, I'm fascinated with the zone and getting in the zone. And you know, from the moment I met you a few hours ago, right when you're breathing, I walked in and you're breathing intensely and then walking up and I was like, okay, this guy's in the zone already, right when I met you.
Yeah.
One, how do you prepare to get into the zone when you're jumping off a 200-foot cliff or you're in a big wave or whatever you're doing, these breathing strategies, a workout, anything you're doing, the pool stuff? How do you prepare to get into the zone? Because you can't just... I'm going to go surf a big wave today and jump on the board and just take it lightly, I would assume, because your life is at hand.
Yeah.
So what do you do to prepare for that?
Well, I mean, a big part of it, you know, I mean, I've been doing this so long that I have the ability to kind of just go and do it.
Access it, yeah.
It's kind of, it's just right below the surface. It's just sitting there like the whole
time. Any moment, yeah.
It can just rear its head. You know, which is good and bad.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not something that, you know, you know, because you have the capacity to just do things in a way that you have to govern that because that's the kind of stuff that doesn't go over well in a, you know, in a densely populated area.
Yeah.
but a lot of it has to do with the preparation. You know, I'd say the real art of the preparation for being in the zone is your preparation.
Mm.
That it's really about, you know, the way you eat, the way you sleep, the way you live, what your relationships are, all those stuff. Like you're not distracted with all this and you get rid of stuff quickly. Like I get rid of stuff I have high turnover. So I get rid of, you know, if I have a problem with somebody, I go talk to them. I call them up. I drive right to their house.
Wow.
If, you know, I want to get clear. I want it clean.
Yeah.
I don't want anything. I don't like any kind of looming thing and I just want to, even if we disagree to disagree, you know, I want to get,
at least you're clear on the disagreement.
I'm clear. Yeah. I'm good. Like we go, we handle it. And a lot of times I'll say stuff to people and do things that I'm not right, but that's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know, and I quote, Dennis Miller, the comedian all the time. And I say, you know, this is my opinion. I could be wrong, but it's my opinion. This is how I feel. And through that process, I think that really helps me, have a cleaner slate. And I think that's really a critical part of coming into being in the zone.
Yeah. Because you're clear energy, you're focused, you're not wondering about relationship issues.
Exactly. Which is a big factor in your ability to, because really the zone is ultimately the now.
Not holding on to the past, not worried and fearful of the future.
It's the now. It's the moment, right? And that's what surfing's about. I mean, I always tell people the act of riding a wave really has no beginning and no end. It's just a continuation of where you left off. And so you go and you're in this thing and there's ends of rides and beginnings of rides, but surfing itself of the art of, or the act of riding the wave, that motion, that feeling, that's just a place where there's no time. There's no beginning and no end. That's why we seek it out. We crave it like what, you know, we do meditate. That is a meditation.
Yeah.
That in that moment, and it, you know, and for somebody who's learning, I'm jealous because they can do it on a 1 foot wave. Yeah. You know, the wave can be this big and they go, and then all of a sudden they're like, it's like, you know, it's like in Star Wars when they go into hyperspace, you know, where everything just goes
whee.
Well, that's what it is. And you're like, and then it ends and you're like, oh, I want to go do that again, you know, but it's a really unique thing. And that zone or that's what that is. I mean, that's what that is in any sport and any level. And when people are so skilled at something that they've done it for so many hours, it's a easier place for them to be in. And they also are so familiar with it. It's that they have a unique ability, to be in it sooner and stay in it longer. And, you know, it's not something, and it becomes very unconscious. It's not something that they really have to work towards. It's just something that their body implements.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say is one of the things that you've done in your life that you're most proud of that maybe not that many people know about you?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I'm the most proud of my family.
Mm.
So, you know, I mean, that's, you know, I'm the most proud of my relationship, you know, my relationship with my wife, with Gabby, my girlfriend, my lover, and, you know, my children and, you know, that, and then the selfish side of it, first of all, I'm most proud of the fact that I'm still here, that I've survived and I'm like still breathing. Cause people, hey, how you doing? I'm like, well, air's still coming in and out of the hole right now. Pretty fantastic. So, so that's a big part of it. That I've had the fortune to survive, the blessing to survive and that I'm still here. That's a big thing. And then if you want to get into, you know, what am I the most proud of something like, of my discipline, like I quit drinking like 9 years ago.
Mm.
And it was a thing more out of my discipline than it was out of there was nothing good coming from it. And I was I got to a point where I was tired of telling myself, my favorite was red wine and I could drink a couple bottles every night and
a couple bottles.
Wait. Oh yeah.
Not glasses, bottles.
Yeah. Well, bottles, only three glasses.
Okay.
Let's get that straight.
Okay.
But you know, I could have five or six, whatever glasses a night.
Sure.
And then do that every night and wake up at 5 a.m. and train for 5 hours and ride giant waves and run around and do all this stuff too. So I could, it was easy for me to justify it. And then at a certain point I got tired of, lying to myself.
Mm.
And my mom's gone now, but one of her quotes that I always use is that if you can't be true to yourself, you can't be true to anybody. So I kind of, I can't be true to myself and I'm trying to tell myself I can do this, but I don't do it. Then how deep are my relationships and what can I do there? And so I went, okay, boom. And I just stopped drinking. Well, you know, I was one day and, you know, I always say all the dumbest things I ever did were when I was drinking, which they are. Well, if I look back and look at stupid things I've done, I was like, oh yeah, that was drunk for sure. It says right on the bottle, impairs motor skills, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dulls your judgment.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. What would you say is the scariest thing or scariest encounter you've ever experienced? With all the extreme things you've done, was there a moment where you really thought more than every other moment, wow, this is it. Like, I'm done.
You know, I got lost at sea and it was only for the day, but a day is a long time.
Only for a day?
Yeah.
That's still scary.
Yeah, it was scary.
Wow. It was scary. How'd you get lost?
I was jet skiing between islands in Hawaii and the fog was really bad from the volcano. The smoke from the volcano was, the visibility was less than a mile and I went, just off course, just got the unusual current and a combination of a few factors just put me out in the middle of the ocean about 60 miles north of the Big Island, and which kind of the next stop's Alaska or something. It's a bad world because you're in the middle of the ocean anyway.
Yeah.
And so that was, I had a while to think about things and I was like, that was, you know, I mean, I've had other traumatic moments, that were short-lived.
Like 2 minutes or, yeah.
Yeah, you know, being held down at the bottom of the ocean by a giant wave and wondering, with boots on, wondering if you're ever going to come up, and, you know, falling in glaciers. I mean, I've had a lot of pinned on waterfall. I mean, there's a long list. I can just keep going. But the fact is that this one was like a stretched out one. And
your mind will play tricks on you.
That's right. You start, you know, when you sit with yourself for 14 hours and, you know, wonder if, you know, if you're ever going to get back again. There's, it's, you know, and I can only imagine what you'd do if you went days and days. I mean, at a certain point, you start, I think, having to, you know, you have to start trying to figure out, you know, how to survive. But I wasn't quite to that point yet. I was still on the, you know, am I gonna, you know,
you weren't that hungry yet?
No, yeah. Not yet. But
wow. So what happened? A boat came.
I got rescued by the Coast Guard. I had an EPIRB, which I didn't know if it was working or not. You know, you just turn them on and they have a little light that beeps, and, you know, you don't know what that means. I mean, it could be beeping. It doesn't mean anybody's reading it or are they hearing it? And so that, I had like a C-130 flew over me. I mean, first of all, finding somebody in the ocean, even with an EPIRB, is like finding a needle in a haystack.
Oh my goodness.
Especially when you're, you know, on a jet ski.
So many miles.
Miles. It's a big, big place.
So what happened mentally for you or emotionally after that moment when you saw the Coast Guard coming up, realized?
No, the plane flew over first.
Oh, the plane flew over.
Dropped.
You're like.
And I was like, well, the plane's not going to be able to pick me up. And then, so it flew away. And I was like, well, first it flew over and didn't see me. And then I was like, well, that was it. That was my shot.
It's over. Oh, man.
And then it came back around like 45 minutes later and was down low. And then they flew over and saw me. And then it split. And I'm like, because I was thinking, all right, the plane's here. And then I'm like, well, what are they going to do? Like, how am I going to get? I can't get, it's not going to land.
Yeah.
And so, and then about an hour after that, a chopper showed up and
you knew.
And plucked me out. Yeah, they plucked me out of the water. And
wow. Also, it was a helicopter.
Yeah, gosh. With a basket. Well, I mean, those big, the big red boys.
Sure.
Those,
so it wasn't
range.
A boat. It was a...
No.
Wow.
No, it was a chopper. The boat would have been, you know, probably would have been at night.
So you were sitting on, and you were sitting on the jet ski.
Yeah. I'd been rowing for a while. I had the makeshift oar system that I had brought with me just in case of something. I don't know what I thought, in case something broke down. So I had makeshift oars and I actually hadn't run the jet ski out of gas because I was, had the foresight to know, like, hey, listen, if it doesn't have any gas, I'm immobile.
You're stuck.
Where if I have a little bit, I can run away from a shark or I can go to a boat or I have some mobility. So
yeah,
I just
smart
left, you know, like left a gallon in it, like,
wow,
leave a gallon.
Then what did you, I mean, was there any shift inside of you after that moment where you're like, okay,
I said there was, and then everybody else just laughed, But, you know, I definitely, you know, I prayed and said, you know, please, Lord, you know, save me. And, you know, I promise I'll turn from my sinful ways, you know.
And did you?
And I did. I think I did
months.
Partially, you know. I mean, I think at a certain point, it definitely, I mean, it, you know, each one of those things has a effect on the wheel, every spoke. You just don't know what effect what spoke has and, you know, how that played in. But I mean, absolutely how that affected me.
Yeah.
It was pretty heavy. And then I was working on Waterworld at the time, the movie. I was in the stunt department. And when I got there, the stunt guys just embraced me like, you know, like one of their lost brothers. And I mean, it was a big emotional, when I got back in the Coast Guard, helicopter and landed. All my family was at the airport, and it was an intense emotional thing. You know, I say that it, you know, rounded some of the corners. You know,
yeah, a little bit.
They just filed some of the edges.
But, I mean, when I was in Hawaii, I remember hearing the story of the legend Eddie Aikau, who, you know, went out and sacrificed his life, and it's like he was the biggest hero in Hawaii. I'm assuming one of the biggest heroes. It's almost like you almost experienced the same thing.
Yeah. I might not have got the hero part, but I definitely was experiencing the loss
part,
of sea part.
The idiot part, yeah. Now, do you still do the big extreme waves and the big extreme?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Is it as big as it used to be?
Well, it's as big as it'll get me.
Right. As big as it'll get you? Yeah. But it's as big as it used to be 20 years ago?
It's as big as the ocean will give me.
Oh, really? You'll go as big as you can go. Still,
it's not, yeah.
And does it worry you now with the family and doing these extreme activities still?
I mean, it worries me because it always has worried me. So it doesn't, you know, I don't think it's I don't think that the, I mean, the intensity of the fear when it is as much as it can be, I don't think can increase.
Mm, right. It's scary.
I don't think that at a certain point, there's only so much fear that you can, you know, that you can really muster. And right. At the end, it's, I don't think I mean, that's a commonly asked question is, you know, do you do it different because you have daughters and a family? And I'm, and, you know, and I continue to answer it in the same way I have from the beginning, which is, you know, I really want them to know me for who I am. And I'm a big wave rider as one of the things that I do. And I want them to see how that makes me. Mm. That when I'm done doing that, what do I look like? Before I do it, what do I look like? What, you know, what is that? What's that effect on dad?
What's it make you feel? Who do you become when you?
Well, I have an energy, that comes into me that's, you know, that it's from there.
Mm-hmm.
That the ocean gives me that, you know, it's that extra, it's that, you know, that superhuman power that you get to do these things that it gives you. And the ocean gives you this power. You know, when the surf's big, it's like I can be wounded, hurt, and I just, it's like you just can come up for it. And then you get the, you know, and you're frantic before you're, you know, you're in, if there's a forecast, it's going to be giant, you know, you can have an edge and be unruly in anticipation of it. And, you know, and then tired right before, sometimes really just exhausted from the anticipation, but it's almost like the body has a mechanism to kind of shut the system way down before it's going to come up. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of get that and, you know, and then of course the elated, you know, either the agony of defeat or the, you know, or just the elated, you know, feeling of and expression of, you know, accomplishing something unique and special. And I continue to evolve in the way I do it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my objectives are still the same. I don't participate in, you know, it's like I've shifted to another aspect of big wave because of through my natural evolution and not for any other reason than that. And I'm fortunate that, you know, like the last season I just had was the, you know, that was the highest kind of level of what I could do, that I've had so far.
Really? So last season. Wow.
Yeah. So, and it's, you know, in a way now, at this point, I don't think I could do what I did 20 years ago the way I did it 20 years ago, but mostly because that's not what I'm doing. Not because I couldn't do it if that's what I was doing. It's just I'm not doing that. And I think I have a unique, I would like to say maybe part of it was a plan, but I think I have something unique, which is I get to keep changing it.
Of course, evolving.
Yeah, which allows me, first of all, to adjust the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So the sport changes a little bit each time, so the goal changes. So I keep shifting and adapt, and which leads me to ultimately continued contentment and avoiding what a famous stuntman: don't let your memories be bigger than your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dreams continue to be bigger than that's my memories, cool. and, I like and that. As big as my memories are. And so that's a big thing. I think that's a big part of what, you know, we're right now, the focus is on hydrofoil surfing. And we know through the,
that's what the thing underneath
the board lifts up and flies above the water. A lot more dangerous. you're attached to the board. The board's, you know, like a samurai sword, but, which adds to the danger. It makes so you don't need quite as big a surf to have it be
dangerous. Yeah.
And
interesting,
which is interesting because now it's like in less conditions you can be, it'd be like, you know, you're a motorbike racer and then now you do it naked. So you go half the speed and it's twice as scary.
Yeah.
so it's a little bit like that kind of a situation where, but yet on the top end of it, we know that this is the way that we can ride the biggest waves in the world.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So
what would life be like if there were no waves?
Be flat. You'd have to have giant motors. There'd have to be a lot of pistons involved and a lot of fuel to make up for that.
Okay.
You know, I mean, but if there was no waves, ultimately,
there's no waves for you to surf.
Listen, if there was no waves, there would be no life.
Mm.
That's the only thing. That's the one little catch about that one, which because if there was no waves, it'd mean that there was no storms, which means there'd be no weather, which means that there'd be, we'd have a hard time existing here because everything would be in chaos. So it's just a coincidence that the waves are an intricate part of nature and its energy and our life on Earth. But we need
storms to thrive is what you're telling me.
We do. We need for our environment to keep churning and mixing the air and, you know,
I think
creating the rain and creating the systems. I mean, that's an essential part of our environment.
Would you say as individuals, we need storms to thrive as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's
the same thing. Yeah.
It's symbolic. There's always,
of course, what I was going for.
Yeah.
I want to finish with a couple of questions.
Okay.
Because this has been awesome, so thank you so far for sharing everything. One of the things I want to ask is, what are you most grateful for recently?
Well, I'm most grateful for my family, for sure. I mean, it's
not just because Gabby's listening.
No, not just because Gabby's listening, but yeah, just love. You know, I think I'm most grateful for loving and being loved. Being loved is, I mean, by your friends. You know, of course, first by your family, you know, and that I've been able to do the things that I love so much and make a life of it. I think that's been, you know, that's been something that's been it's just been an amazing. It continues to be an amazing blessing to you know. I always quote The Jerk. You know, again. Find your special purpose, but you know, that's what I want my daughters to do, find their special purpose, but to be able to find your, you know, find your special purpose and then do it, find it young and then have a life of doing it. And when I look at what I've been able to do in my life, I mean, I've lived lives, many lives. and I see, you know, I'm around some of the wealthiest people in the world, and I feel sorry for them because that with all that abundance of wealth, they don't have what is the greatest gift, the greatest treasure, which is ultimately first having great relations, but ultimately great experiences, and these ones that you can't buy. You can't buy this stuff because you can't buy skill. And you can't buy experience. You have to earn it, and you have to learn it. And
what's the key to having great relationships while you go after your dream, after your big dreams? And what's the key to thriving that? In relationships?
You know, I mean, I think there's a combination of a couple of things. To be honest, I think you got to be truthful with yourself, with the people. Whoever that is, you got to be truthful and again, even expressing things that are just your opinion. Again, you could be wrong. Chances are you might be.
Yeah.
A lot of times you are. Admitting you're wrong.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Accepting the fact that you're wrong.
Dropping your ego.
Saying you're sorry.
Yeah.
For sure. Saying you're sorry. And loving. But loving for real. Like in a real way, being somebody and also being reliable, being reliable, like having them, you know, unique. And that all comes from truth and all these other pieces, you know, lead into, you know, people knowing they can rely on you and knowing that, you know, and sometimes I'm not good with the small stuff as good, but knowing that when it comes down and it gets heavy, you're the one they want. It's like they want to call you. They can, you know, my girls, I can build such confidence in them if they know that they have this rock behind. They know that there's a big rock in the back, then they can just go out and
do anything,
rip it up. And then, cause they know that they can, you know, turn around and there's a rock there, you know, ready to be there for them.
What's the three things that you do every morning, that you feel like is a must for you to do in order to have a successful day, in order to have the most out of your day? The three maybe habits that you have to perform, something you eat, a practice, something with your family. What are those three things to set you up to win?
To set me up to win? I need to shower when I wake up. Like as soon as I wake up, I need to go in the water, yeah. like rinse off, be in the water, dive in the water, swim in the water, whatever. Ultimately like
pool water,
but shower first, like shower. Out of the bed, going straight to the shower.
Yeah.
You know, that just
cold, hot.
Yeah. Cold, hot. But you normally cold always at the end.
Yeah.
If I go hot, otherwise just straight, you know, stand in the cold shower.
Yeah.
Got to have that. That's just like that gets me rolling in the beginning. Then from there we go to, fuel up, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of, a little morning rituals, whether it's sea salt, water, lemon, you know, some, mushroom powder, some raw eggs, you know, I'm going to caffeinate.
Raw eggs?
I'm going to caffeinate.
Raw eggs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you Rocky?
Yeah.
In a way.
I like it. In a way. There's okay. a Rocky aspect of it.
How many raw eggs do you have?
A couple raw eggs every day.
Oh.
So I make it easy. You poke a hole in them and you just suck them out of the egg.
Oh.
It doesn't have that same effect.
Really?
You don't gag on them. No gag reflex.
Okay.
But, and then, you know, and then fuel, like caffeine up, caffeinate uh-huh. that. So that's all part of that morning ritual, like the fueling. And then ultimately it's the girls, contact with the girls.
That's
you
great.
Know, the good morning kiss, from Gabby and maybe, a hot cocoa espresso, conversation, cool. little touch, cut, kiss on the girls, you know, kiss, touch yeah. the girls, see the girls. And then we're ready to
rock and roll,
whatever we got to do, climb a hill, you know, knock a tree, whatever,
yeah.
whatever it is, you know. Lay around and breathe. You know,
for
whatever,
an hour?
Whatever. Yeah. yeah.
Sweat and almost
yeah.
pass out.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are the, if it's the last day of your life and you've got three truths of all the 50 lives you've lived.
Yeah.
And you could boil it down to three simple truths about life to share with your family, your friends, the world. And you got a piece of paper, you could write them down. And that's all they got to have of you with these three things left. What would you say are those three truths?
But like parables. Well, I'm going to have to give you the one that my mom gave me, which is if you can't be true to yourself, then you can't be true to anyone.
Mm.
I'd have to put that right up there at the top because that's just, mandatory. And you know, again, I'd have to go, I got to go hard right again on this one and I'd be, you know, speed and take chances.
Speed and take chances.
Speed and take chances. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. Because that brings a focus on. That's how I tell people, like, that's my, you know, like people go, be safe, have a safe trip. I'm like, speed and take chances. Like, mm-hmm. because in a way, that's more, you know, caution killed the cat. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, you gotta be like a little more like, you know, go into it with, you know, I don't know. I think it's a longer list than that, but those are the ones that just pop out okay. right away. Can't be true to yourself, can't be true to anyone, which ultimately you need to be true to everyone. What else?
The third one
would be, that's a pretty tough one. I'm trying to think. Maybe the third one I might have to give you the third one because I have a couple different ways I want to go with it.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like I'll waste what would be the most important. I'm going to croak and I got to kind of,
take your time.
I'd have to go with love. I'd have to go, you got to love your, you know, you got to go first. And Gabby has that. She's been saying that about being first, but you got to go with love your, you know, love your neighbors as yourself or, you know, just, we need to be nice to people.
Mm. Okay. I like those
I'm
three
going with
truths.
That one.
I like those three truths.
That's it.
I have one final question for you, but before we ask it, what are you working on? What are you excited about? Your businesses, you've got these food, you've made this incredible coffee for me this morning. You've got stand-up paddle boards. You got, tell me everything you got going on. Where can we connect with you online?
Well, I got Laird Stand-Up, which is a stand-up paddling equipment, which obviously I was instrumental in starting that sport.
Yeah.
And that's a bunch of stand-up equipment for flat water, waves, learning, you know, experts, all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and some really nice equipment. So Laird Stand-Up, and then I have an apparel line that we're just launching, a Laird apparel stuff that I'm doing, which
it's part of the hats up here, I saw.
Yeah, that's one of the parts of it. It's a technical line, which all kinds of really, like, technical, you know, surf shorts and shirts that dry really quick and fitness workout stuff and stretch stuff and, you know, like a whole, like a, you know, things that you're going to need in, you know, in the daily life of kind of thing. And then I have this, thing called the Total Wave that we're used. It's by the pool that you didn't see. That's like this, roller.
That's yours?
That's the roller pipe. Yeah.
Wow.
Gabby and I are involved in that project.
That's cool.
And it's a roller fitness device that uses momentum. And so you can do all these different exercises in this. It has this kind of movement that's not only sport specific for any board sport or skiing or any kind of movement, but then it's amazing for just agility and balance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a whole, connective tissue kind of thing where you use the whole body to do it.
Sure, sure.
So there's some cardio aspects to that. Mm. So the Total Wave and then the golf board, is exploding. That's the one right now that we have a lot of, push behind as well.
Sure.
And the golf board is, you know, you're going to see it on a lot of the golf courses, but you can go to golfboard.com.
Golfboard.com.
And check that out and laugh. And it's an all-wheel drive electric board that you play golf on that's revolutionizing the game of golf.
Really?
It's speeding up play. It's making good players play better. It's bringing new people into it. It's allowing older people, you know, a whole new way perspective. It's a little bit like, and I don't know if you know of stand-up paddle's effect on kind of water sports, but stand-up paddling is the fastest growing sport in the world right now and has been for the last couple of years. And it's because it's accessibility, mobility, perspective. Mm. It just changes your whole experience. And that's what the golf board's doing in golf. And then I have lairdsuperfood.com.
You just launched this, right? Laird's Superfood or Laird?
Laird.
Laird, no S.
Laird Superfood. Yep. Yeah. Lairdsuperfood.com. And that we have some formulas like the one you tried this morning.
Incredible.
We have a powdered formula. For powder, people that like powders better, that especially if you're a coffee drinker and but it's meant to be put in tea or hot cocoa as well. And there's also some dessert stuff that they're making with it.
That's great.
Then we're gonna have recipes and you can go to, lairdsuperfood.com and we have coffee beans on there and then these other top fuel formula and coconut sugar and a bunch of other products that we're launching. And it's, you know, that one's, I mean, all these things that I'm involved in are all authentic to me. I mean, it's things that I use naturally or I'm involved with it because that's just the nature of my approach. I think that's the only sincere, thing, the way that I can do it. And then that's the big pusher are those items right now. And then I have another thing called XPT, which is extreme pool training, which you didn't get to experience, but
hopefully I'll come back.
But you got to experience the land part of it, which is
that
land stuff we implement into the water.
Yeah.
And, but it's something a little bit different. And then, those are the main
things you're working
on. Yeah. And I also have we're in the process of shooting a documentary about foiling.
Okay.
There's a lady by the name of Roy Kennedy, who's one of the Kennedys that is, but she's also a famous documentarian director. And so we're doing a film about hydrofoil surfing and the pursuit of trying to ride the biggest, furthest, fastest waves in the world.
Wow.
And so that's another one of our thrusts.
That's cool.
And it's just, you know, it's
lots of fun things.
Absolutely. That's awesome. I think it's only natural to just keep evolving. And, you know, these are things I'm excited about, stuff I do, or, you know, that I do naturally. And so it's why not?
Very cool. We'll have it all linked up below in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
Final question before I ask, I always finish with an acknowledgement of my guest.
Yes.
So I want to acknowledge you I've only experienced you for a couple hours and now,
but
from everything I know about you, things I've heard about you, the research, I want to acknowledge you for your consistency. You've been so consistent over your whole career, your whole life, of being true to who you are. So I'm acknowledging you, secondly, for your truth.
Yes.
And being unapologetically you all the time from everything I've seen and our experience together.
Yeah.
And also the third thing I want to acknowledge is your courage, your consistent courage.
Yes.
To be able to sustain this over the years and how you serve so many people, you know, just the level of service and care
yeah.
and grace that you have as a yeah. as a manly man.
Yeah.
You have so much grace
Thank
about you.
You,
whether you know that or not.
Thank you.
And I was experiencing that during the breathing exercises
yeah.
when I was about to pass out.
Sure.
So
sure.
I want to really acknowledge you for all that you do for so many people and
Thank
for
you.
Your consistency, your truth, and your care.
Thank you.
And your courage.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank
appreciate
you for
it.
That. I appreciate
it.
That.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks a lot.
The final question
okay.
is what's your definition of greatness?
Mm. What's my definition? It's probably long. It's a long, but great is compassionate.
Mm.
Absolutely. Incapable of being great without being compassionate. Great is humble. Because you're not great unless you're humble. So we got compassionate and humble. Great is courageous.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta be courageous.
Yeah.
So gotta be compassionate, gotta be humble, gotta be courageous.
Yeah.
Great is loving. Gotta be loving. If you're not mm-hmm. loving, then you're definitely not compassionate. And that's you know that would probably be and what else? I think it goes on and on, but I'll start with that.
Awesome, Laird Hamilton. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it so much for having me.
Thank you.
It was
my pleasure.
There you have it, guys. LewisHouse.com/212. Please share this with your friends. Anyone who wants to be inspired to learn more about how to optimize their body, their mind, their health, their lifestyle, make sure to share this link, LewisHouse.com, with your friends over on Facebook and Twitter and Google+. Again, it's LewisHouse.com/212. Big thank you. Very grateful to have Laird on and share his wisdom with all of the listeners at the School of Greatness. And make sure to head back to the show notes to learn more about all that he's up to and everything he's got going on in his business, his lifestyle. Check out his websites, all of his new products. Make sure to go head over there and learn more over at the show notes, LewisHouse.com/212, very soon. Thank you guys again so much. Make sure to check out LewisHouse.com/212 for more. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
At Metro, get an iPhone 12 with 5G and a dual camera system for $99.99. Take amazing pictures and share them instantly. And don't put up with life's yada yada.
Yada yada.
Like photo bombers. Zoom, crop out,
yada yada,
and bye.
You don't take yada yada in life, don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Get iPhone 12 with 5G with no activation fees and nada yada yada. Only at Metro by T-Mobile. Switch to Metro, bring your ID. This offer isn't available for customers currently at T-Mobile or that have been with Metro in the past 180 days.